I woke up this morning to a text from our oldest daughter. She is smart and kind and playful and a wonderful, confident mother. But none of that was in her text this morning. What was in her text was her concern, her fatigue, her tiredness, her worry for her babies. Her text just asked a simple question. Will the world ever go back to normal, or is it forever changed in some ways, like after 9/11? I wrote her back, no jokes, no thoughtful reply meant to ease her mind or encourage her, just what I was feeling at the moment. It is probably forever changed in ways greater than 9/11. And then her one-word reply, no punctuation, no emojis. Wow. You might be thinking that as her mother, and especially as her mother, the pastor, I should have given her more. I myself think I should have given her more, but I didn't have it. At that moment, I didn't have it. Then I sat down at the computer to make a few changes to my sermon, changes that had come to me during the night, and I started to make them, and my little girl's voice, she's 31, but you know how mothers are, my little girl's voice wouldn't leave my head. Will the world ever go back to normal, or is it forever changed in some ways like after 9/11? And I realized something. I realized that the sermon I was looking at was for the normal world, the world minus a pandemic and thousands upon thousands upon thousands sick and thousands more dying and no children in school and the churches empty on Palm Sunday and the stores marked with tape on the floors strangely reminiscent of body outlines and crime scenes directing us to stay 6 feet apart. And masks on everyone, masks that make it difficult to say hello and nearly impossible to offer a smile to one another. My sermon was meant for another world, another time. It wasn't a bad sermon. It fit perfectly into our Lenten worship series, I Wonder As I Wander, in which we've been taking on some of the big questions of our faith. Questions like, did Jesus exist? And what about original sin? And did there have to be a cross? And today, what about free will? I started out with a little background. The idea of free will is the idea that human beings can freely choose between good and evil, and freely choose whether we want to be saved by God or not. All you ever need to know is in this reading from Genesis, from the second chapter, God planted a garden in Eden and included every kind of plant and tree, those that produced good fruit and those that were simply beautiful to look at. In the middle of the garden, God planted the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. God created humans and placed them in the garden and said, you may eat from every tree in the garden except from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Left then to exercise our own free will, human beings chose to eat from the one tree God had placed off limits. Thus began our long, long history of disobeying the will of God. St. Augustine said that humans had to have some free will so we could choose whether or not we wanted to be saved by God. During the Protestant Reformation, reformers such as Martin Luther and John Calvin re-examined this idea of free will as handed down by the Catholic Church. They determined, and now I'm making this very simple, that despite what Augustine said, humans don't actually decide whether they want to be saved by God. They decided that God predetermined who will be saved and who will be damned. The Puritans who came to New England placed his idea of predestination high upon their altar of self-righteousness. The Puritans believed that the chosen were destined for heaven. The rest of us were not, and thank heavens they were given insider knowledge as to who was in and who was out. And after that, after I had offered you the flimsiest grasp of free will imaginable, I blasted apart my own explanation by mentioning an article from The Atlantic written by Stephen Cave titled, "There's No Such Thing as Free Will, But We're Better Off Believing in It Anyway." Cave begins by explaining that human codes of ethics assume that we can freely choose between right and wrong. He says that in the Christian tradition, free will, known as moral liberty, is the ability to discern and pursue the greatest good instead of simply acting on our appetites and desires. But then he starts to make his case against free will. Simply put, he says, behavioral scientists are growing bolder and bolder in their assertions that all human behavior can be explained by cause and effect. He makes a quick trip through Darwin's theory of evolution, which he says, carried through to its logical ends, suggests that even intelligence evolves and therefore must be hereditary. So our ability to choose, he said, is based in our biological inheritance. And then this is what blew my mind. Cave explains that brain scanners have enabled us to peer inside a living person's skull, revealing intricate networks of neurons. We know that changes to brain chemistry can alter behavior. Otherwise, neither alcohol nor antipsychotics would have their desired effects. The same holds true for brain structure. Cases of ordinary adults becoming murderers after developing a brain tumor demonstrates how dependent we are on the physical properties of our brains. American physiologist Benjamin Libet seems to have demonstrated that we have no free will. It was already known that electrical activity builds up in a person's brain before she, for example, moves her hand. Libet showed that the conscious experience of deciding to act, which we usually associate with free will, occurs after the brain has already set the action in motion. Why does any of this matter, you might ask? Because, Cave says, people who believe in free will and who believe in a higher power often make choices in line with their understanding of the right way to behave. Christians who believe in free will, for example, will make choices that they believe are moral and ethical and faithful based on what they believe about God's desire for us. Here's how that plays out. A study of the work habits of day laborers found that those who believe in free will believed that they were in control of their own actions, showed up on time for work, and were rated higher by their supervisors than those who did not believe in free will. In a study of college students, students who believed in their own free will, their ability to make their own choices, were more likely to volunteer their time to help struggling classmates, to give money to a homeless person, or to lend something to someone. And after all that, I was going to go to the scriptures and remind you about this Palm Sunday reading from Matthew's gospel. As they approached Jerusalem and came to the Mount of Olives, Jesus sent two disciples, saying to them, "Go to the village ahead of you, and at once you will find a donkey tied there with her colt by her. Untie them and bring them to me. If anyone says anything to you, say that the Lord needs them and he will send them right away." The disciples went and did as Jesus had instructed them. They brought the donkey and the colt and placed their cloaks on them for Jesus to sit on. And in the context of that story, I was going to talk about Jesus's will. Jesus's free will that set him on a path to the cross. And I was going to tie that to our free will and our acceptance of obedience and our moral choices. And my sermon was going to be big and grand and up to the challenge of Palm Sunday. And then my daughter's text. And I realized that the sermon I was looking at was for the normal world, the world minus a pandemic, minus thousands upon thousands sick, and thousands more dying, and no children in school, and the churches empty on Palm Sunday. My sermon was meant for another world, another time. And I remembered these words shared by a friend. They were written by Lisa Oliveira. A soft reminder as we enter a new week. We, all of us, are currently going through a collective traumatic experience. Trauma is often thought of as too much, too fast, which is exactly what's happening. Of course you're exhausted. Of course you're afraid. Of course you're overwhelmed. Of course you're clinging to certainty in the midst of so much unknown. Of course you aren't as productive, feeling foggy, or wondering how you can possibly go through so many waves of emotions all in the same day. This all makes so much sense in the context of our circumstances. Be gentle with yourself. Have compassion for your process. Give yourself grace. You are good no matter how you are managing this completely new experience. And then I remembered these words from an article by Thomas G. Long, words I used in a long ago Palm Sunday sermon. When Jesus entered Jerusalem, Long says, he did so as a king. But his royalty was not pomp and power, but humble obedience. In obedience, he set his face to Jerusalem, knowing that violence awaited him at journey's end. For Jesus, obedience meant carrying the cross. For most of us, it means lifting 1,000 little and daily crosses in the complexities and demands of our many relationships. Long continues, that is surely one of the reasons we are given the rather odd account of the disciples being sent to fetch a colt for Jesus. Strange, isn't it, he says, how in the midst of the great and suspenseful drama of Jesus' entry into Jerusalem, the gospel writer devotes part of the narrative to fussing about this rather peripheral matter of Jesus' transportation. Yet what we have, Long concludes, is the story of the disciples' small obedience performed under the canopy of Jesus' great obedience. In the securing of the colt, they do as they are told, and in so doing, the small and tattered strands of their lives are woven into the great story of redemption. The small and tattered strands of their lives are woven into the great story of redemption. And that's when it became clear. You don't need grand words about free will. You don't need a new paradigm. You don't need philosophy. You just need someone to encourage you to go get the donkey. Just need someone who can help you tie the small and tattered strands of your life into the great story of redemption, of saving, of healing. Just say yes to the donkey. Simple. The same friend that shared Lisa Olivetta's words also shared this poem written in 1869 by Kathleen O'Mara and reprinted during the 1919 Spanish flu pandemic. It goes like this. And people stayed at home and read books and listened. And they rested and did exercises and made art and played and learned new ways of being and stopped and listened more deeply. Someone meditated. Someone prayed. Someone met their shadow. And people began to think differently and people healed. And in the absence of people who lived in ignorant ways, dangerous, meaningless, and heartless, the earth also began to heal. And when the danger ended and people found themselves, they grieved for the dead and made new choices and dreamed of new visions and created new ways of living and completely healed the earth just as they were healed. So here is my message for Palm Sunday 2020. Just go get the donkey. Just say yes to the donkey. Enter into the grand story of Jesus' saving action. Engage your free will only enough to say, today, I think I will go and fetch the donkey. And then reach out to one person. Sew one face mask. Eat a vegetable that's not French fries and a fruit that's not strawberry ice cream. Or not. Check on a neighbor. Buy an extra can of soup and either drop it by the church or call me to come pick it up. Wear a mask, not so much to protect yourself as to protect others. Love well each other and yourself. Do it freely or do it out of obedience, but do it. Just do it. The next thing, the thing you can do, and it will be enough, and you are enough, and God is with us. Amen.